Many of my bobtail stories come from my years as a professional storyteller. They are personal narrative experiences that grew and evolved from repeated tellings to live audiences. But I do have another category of tales for you to hear. For decades before and after becoming a professional storyteller, I also wrote purely fictional stories. While these stories sometimes reference a true life person, place, or event, they only do so on the road to creating a larger work of pure imagination. And let me add one more thing before you start listening. As often as I get asked if my personal narrative stories, stories that come from my own lived experience, are made up, I also get asked if my fictional stories are true. Isn't that kind of a lovely irony? Then again, truth is a slippery commodity. It turns up in the most unlikely places, even in a fictional story. Sometimes you can look right at it and not see it at all. Hope you enjoy these stories. August Siparis lay dreaming in the dim light of his cell. In his sleep, he rolled about on his shabby straw mat, battling a never-ending army of yellowish, speckled ants, formae foo, and centipedes. Through the tiny, barred slits of his cell, they poured in, biting and stinging, as he, armed with only a tin food plate, swatted wildly. The centipedes were unique to the island of Martinique and capable of biting through leather, since Mount Pele had spewed ash into the upper regions of the mountain forest. They had descended in hordes on the town of Saint-Pierre. In the prison compound, all the prisoners were released to battle the insect invasion with oil and kerosene, brooms, scalding water, stamping feet. As a man condemned to death, only August Siparis was kept in confinement. Occasionally, the guards would walk by, laugh outside his cell, and point at the partly constructed gallows. At other times, they beat him. Semi-conscious, August remembered every voice, every laugh. "August, a little something for you," one of the voices called out, and through the bars of the window came a burlap bag. When it hit the floor, four deadly fer de lance snakes seethed forth. The guards must have paid a quimbassure, a voodoo wizard, to catch them. The serpents set out in different directions. Two slipped under the cell door. A third returned to the burlap sacking. The fourth made straight for August, as if it had taken an instant disliking to him. It edged closer, flicking its tongue in and out of its mouth, then reared up to strike. To August, the snake looked like a strange piece of rope suspended in midair. Momentarily dispossessed of his fear, August deftly blocked the serpent's lunge with his tin plate, grabbed the stunned creature by the tail, and snapped it as if he were cracking a bullwhip. The head flew across the room. He dropped the still writhing body in horror, blood surging from it. August was filled with fear and disgust. Could life be so hellish, he wondered. He wanted to scream, but as he inhaled, the stench of Pele's sulphurous fumes and ash filled his lungs. He was racked with coughing instead. Suddenly, hands were shaking him, rousing him, and he realized he'd been dreaming again. "You okay? You okay?" It was Claude Barclay, one of the pitch men for the sideshow acts. "August, wake up. It's time to go home. Show's over for the day." "Yes, yes, yes, yes. Give me a minute." You go on," said August. The dull glow from the barred windows in his dream vanished, blotted out by the glare of the single bare bulb hanging above his cell. "Damn good take this week, August. 600 tickets in 2 days. Thursday was almost as good. You've got at least, let's see here, well, $60 coming." "Half what it should be," thought August, but he didn't complain. When do we get paid? My rent's due. I'm going to get the boot.
Oh, well, probably Wednesday next.
Why can't we get paid the same week that we work?
August, we've been through this. It's Philip's policy. You know that. Show expenses come first. A family sticks together, right?
You're not my bloody family. None of you. Maybe I'll quit.
August, where would you work? What would you do?
I can lift a load. I'll go back to the docks.
You're dreaming. The doctor said,
well, you know what the doctor said. Your burns and all. Besides, Barclay fell silent.
Who could stand to look at me? Said August. Is that what you mean? Who could stand to work with such a freak?
People are cruel, August. Here, we stick together.
Bullshit!
Claude Barclay shrugged his shoulders. He'd tried more than once to befriend August Sipparis, staying in one of the wagons with the rest of us, he had asked. But wherever they went, August insisted on renting a room apart from the others.
Claude?
Asked August, still lying on his straw mat.
Yes?
Where are we?
You mean what city?
Yeah, what city?
Philadelphia, August. The city of brotherly love.
August Sipparis left the circus fairgrounds and he trudged through the Philadelphia streets. His one-room flat was in a broken part of the city. It was summer, hot and humid, and the air clung like moist paper. Through open windows he heard children crying, men arguing, women singing. The smell of onions frying came from somewhere. Near his building, a group of children still played hopscotch, though it was nearly too dark to see. They recognized him at once.
Volcano Man! Volcano Man!
He knew they didn't know what they were saying. What do a pack of street kids know about a volcano? A tin can fell at his feet. When he looked up, the children scattered.
What do I care? He thought. Nothing hurts me anymore. Might as well tease their own shadows.
He climbed the poorly lit stairs. At each landing he had to duck, for the underside of the next staircase was placed at head level, as if designed for a race of midgets. Once in the room he flopped down in bed, exhausted. Why he should be so tired at night was a mystery to him. All day long he merely paced or slept in the cell of the only survivor of Pele, himself. Yet, at night, he was utterly spent. He tried to save money. He knew people would tire of his act, eventually. But every payday was the same. Barely enough for rent, a couple loaves of bread, some sweet potatoes, fish heads. Where did it go? He was sure Philip cheated him. Barclay seemed honest enough, but who could tell? August Sipparis had seen men on the waterfront in Saint-Pierre calmly discuss murder, rape, robbery. He, August Sipparis, had killed a man, a white man, in an argument. For that he was sentenced to death, which, in turn, saved him from the mighty blast which extinguished the rest of Saint-Pierre, which, in turn, he tried to stop these thoughts. Such a chain of events were possible, he thought, then anything is possible. He lay down on the filthy mattress and stared out the window at the night sky. He knew that up there, beyond the blocking glare of city lights, a thousand thousands of stars blazed magically. In a wide sash-like strip, the Milky Way spread across the blackness, seeming to bind it all together. August Sipparis knew there were names for some of them. Sailors in Saint-Pierre sometimes befriended him, and from them he learned of the Zodiac. They filled his head with names of other places: Madagascar, Rio, New York, Tahiti. They said in America there were carriages that rode high in the air on great steel rails, buildings taller than Pele. Everyone there who wanted to work could do just that. In Saint-Pierre, you fought for jobs. Dock work was heavy and dangerous, and the pay was low.
Sometimes, after unloading a ship, the paymaster might forget you had worked for him. If you raised a fuss, someone could always be found to step in and beat you. Other workers were afraid to back you up for fear they'd be forgotten, too. In the void above him, a meteor flashed through the inky night and then vanished. Saint-Pierre was like that, he thought. One minute, it teemed with life, and the next minute, all was still. Why had he been spared? All around him, innocent life perished. Men and women, bloated, swollen up inside, the air inside them superheated. Some had burst, literally blown apart. Others were reduced to a few charred bones. An entire town, 30,000 souls, turned to cinders in a matter of seconds. Why had he, a convicted killer, been permitted to live? What possible use could he be to anyone? The living dead, he thought, as he studied his burned face in the window reflection. I should put an end to this right now. He considered opening the window and throwing himself to the pavement. His fatigue was just too great. Tomorrow, he promised himself, and then drifted back into dreams of centipedes. Like a somnambulist, August Tsiparas drifted back and forth from his shabby flat to the circus cell. Though people filed by all day, gawking, staring, throwing popcorn, calling him names, he scarcely heard them. Once in a great while, Claude Barclay's voice penetrated the freak show din, and the carny's chant, like a broken record, would reach him. "This man, ladies and gentlemen, survived the most incredible devastation the world has ever known. He laughed at the cloud of fire as it rolled down the slopes of mighty Pele in 1902, a hardened man, a convicted killer, a man who already had a date with the gallows and death, yet he alone escaped." August Tsiparas would lift his head from his pillow and gaze blankly at the crowd. Who were they, he wondered. What did they want? "Once he was strong, black as coal. Now he's mottled as a Dalmatian. Some say it's a curse, the mark of Cain, the Lord God exacting special punishment. Does the mark still burn, ladies and gentlemen? Or does he still sneer at death? Men couldn't kill him. Pele couldn't kill him. Can anything kill the only survivor of Pele?" Night began to blend with day. August Tsiparas spent more and more of his time in his sideshow cell, too dispirited to even pace the floor. "August," Barclay would say, "walk around some more, in the cell. People like that." "I don't give a shit what they like. They're fools." "It's part of the job, man." "What job? This is a zoo. Tell them I'm dreaming, having nightmares."
"Are you?" August Tsiparas nodded. "What do you dream of? Is it Pele?"
"What do you think? I hear people outside my cell screaming, 'Help! I'm on fire! I'm dead!' That's what they said. Then it was quiet. They were all gone, everyone. When I sleep, I see them again. All those people I knew. They have no features. Their eyes and noses are burnt away. Blackened stumps stick from their mouths, tongues. And they wag at me. They call me. They point to me. They accuse me. 'Why are you alive, August? You should be with us.' Other times, insects and snakes crawl into my cell. Or the guards have come to beat me again. 'Move in with us, August. We can help you.' 'Leave me alone, Barclay. I'm just grist for your mill. Go away.'"
On the last night they were in Philadelphia, August Tsiparas slept in his cell. He'd given up the flat. Since he only slept at the boarding room and dreamed of being in the cell, he reasoned he might as well be there in fact. At least in the cell, he felt he was someplace familiar. That night he had a dream, unlike the others. As he gazed out the tiny barred slit of the window, he saw the gallows. It had been erected for his hanging. The prison yard was strangely empty. A woman approached the gallows, stood a moment, then turned and approached his cell.
Halfway across the prison yard, he recognized her. Marguerite, the beautiful Creole he'd nearly married many, many years ago. She walked right up to the cell and knelt in the dust before him. Her black eyes flashed with great tears that hung but refused to fall. She put her arms through the bars and gently stroked his cheek. He was choked with tears of his own. Why had he ever scorned this woman? If they had married, he would have been a father. They might have made some kind of home together away from Saint-Pierre. But it was too late for all that. The tear finally rolled down her face. "August, you're so badly burned," said Marguerite.
"Pelé," he answered, and he realized for a moment that in this dream, Pelé had not yet erupted. The gallows still stood, yet already he was marked.
"Marguerite," he asked, "did you perish too?"
"We all died, August. Thieves and sailors, washerwomen, cane cutters, bankers, fishermen, even you, August. You too."
No, Marguerite, look, I'm alive. I was spared. This cell saved me. The bars were clogged with ash, and I was burned, as you see, but I lived through it."
"Sweet August, you perished, just like the rest of us."
"Marguerite, touch me. Feel my skin, my cheek. I'm alive. I'm alive," he shouted at her.
The tenderness he'd all but forgotten crept into him and mixed with desire. The sweet smell of almonds clung to her hands. A small chain with a tiny golden cross hung at her neck. As she caressed his cheek, he grew weak and could barely stand. The touch was like a warm breeze, a piece of silk.
"Marguerite," he said.
But she was gone, vanished. He was sitting up on the mattress now, fully awake. It seemed her touch lingered on his cheek.
"Like the rest of us," echoed the voice in his head, and August Siparis shuddered and cried.
Night passed. August Siparis could not sleep. The image of Marguerite was so thoroughly engraved in his mind that each time he closed his eyes, she appeared to him. Though not fully asleep, August Siparis began to have waking dreams of her, in which they talked together, and they met in New York or London or other cities where the circus visited. They sat in Paris bistros and talked about Saint-Pierre before Pelé, about the years when they had courted, about how they both longed for old Martinique.
"But I couldn't go back there now," said August Siparis.
"Nor could I," said Marguerite. "Too many ghosts. Martinique is just a cemetery for us now. What are we but corpses wandering the world? We're stubborn, August. We refuse to lie down with the others.
Marguerite, tell me you'll come to me someday. My life here, it isn't real. I hardly know what I'm doing when I leave this cell. If only you could come to me, if we could be together again."
"But I'm here now, August. Aren't we sitting together? Aren't we talking to one another?"
"But this is only a dream, Marguerite. I want you in the world, in the waking world. We could bring life back to each other."
"Life?" A pitying smile crossed her face. "You should have married me those many years ago."
"August?"
It was Barclay. August Siparis opened his eyes. Barclay was at the cell door, staring.
"Who are you talking to?" he asked.
"Myself," said August Siparis, sullen, unhappy that the image had vanished.
"You better leave off with that. We open in 15 minutes. I just thought you might want to know."
"Uh-huh.
You need anything?"
"No." Barclay lingered a minute, staring. August Siparis had already closed his eyes again. His countenance was eerie. Huge portions of skin were burned, had turned a pale white, taken on the sheen and cast of sailcloth. Against the splotches of pitch blackness that constituted his original color, that icy whiteness looked sewed on like patches. He didn't appear to be black or white. With hair grown back neither curly nor straight, and nostrils which had failed to heal properly, partly seared away, the size of August Siparis' body, the girth of his thighs and arms, the span of his chest, all indicated a strong young person, but the way he sat, shoulders hunched, head
down, the bitter look in his eyes, was all the fatigue and last defense of an old man.
"How old is he?" wondered Barclay. "Couldn't last much longer. Taken to muttering to himself in that island patois. Poor devil," said Barclay. And then he left to open the ticket booth for the day.
August Separs, he feared that Marguerite might not appear to him when the show pulled up stakes for the next town. But no matter where they moved, her image followed. Like a meditating monk, he passed the days, sitting or lying in a trance-like state. In his dream state, he could open his eyes, and different times and places would unfold before him. He'd speak the Creole tongue of Martinique in a low, throaty whisper. The crowds became jittery. Barclay argued with him occasionally, tried to get him to move around, but all to no avail. Philip even stepped in, but August Separs was acid tongues.
"Those vermin don't care if I move or not. They see my burns better if I sit still. I'm a better target for their popcorn. I'm still drawing well. I pay my own. When people forget Pele, you'll dump me whether I move or not. Now get out of my cell."
The dreams of Marguerite grew more and more lifelike. She began to comment on August Separs' daily life. She urged him to eat better. His clothes were in tatters, needed mending. Perhaps he should see a doctor about his eyes, which were continually watering and red. August Separs grew confused about her. Was she a dream or not? Once they argued. August Separs cursed Barclay for continually waking him. Marguerite disagreed. Barclay was only doing his job. Barclay made friendly overtures. "You ignore him," she said, "or you insult him." Their voices rose. In the heat of the moment, she slapped him. August woke. He ran to the mirror. A pinkish glow rose and then faded on his white, patchy cheek. After that, August Separs lost all track of time. He'd forget to pick up his paycheck. Barclay had to remind him to eat. Once he walked into his cell naked, returned from bathing, only to find a crowd of jeering people watching him. He'd forgotten the time of day. The crowds, Barclay, the circus noises, they all lost significance. Philip came to the cell on the evening of the shower incident and scolded him. August listened as if wrapped in a haze. Marguerite, he knew, would be waiting for him when he closed his eyes. She too would scold him, and he could scarcely wait. Months passed. The earlier moments when August Separs felt certain Marguerite was a dream image became fewer and fewer. They dared to relive moments of their past in places on Martinique that were long buried beneath lava and ash. Though she never denied the dream idea, she never admitted it either. Suppose he was a dream, her dream. What of it? The dead need each other, in this world as much as the next. They were together, she said, for whatever reason. Why resist it? We won't be parted, August. Ever again, she whispered in his ear. He remained dejected and unconvinced. There's no always, Marguerite. There's no such certainty to life. Tomorrow, you might vanish like Pele. Gone. One day I'll close my eyes, and instead of your face, I'll see centipedes again.
August, you're wrong.
Prove it. Come to me. But instead she took his hand and held it to her breast. Her skin was hot. A coursing ran up his spine. She led him to the straw mat, for in this dream they were in the cell on Martinique. She sat him down in front of her, stood before him, and silently undressed. Slowly she removed the long, gaily colored skirt and smock. Her hair was very wavy and long, as it had been many years before. The silk kerchief she wore held the shimmering tresses gathered at the back. She pulled it free and shook her head. The dim glow from the barred window played on the highlights of her hair as it splayed out, covering her shoulders and chest. She took August Separs' hands, placed them on her breasts. They heaved with her breath. He buried his face amongst her dark hair, tasted her smooth skin as he covered her with kisses. She lay down on the mat as he arose to undress. For an instant, he glanced in the mirror and was astounded by his own image. Once again, he was the lithe, muscular man he'd been 10 years earlier. His skin was smooth and black, untouched by Pele's fire. A short, fast ripple played over his powerful forearm as the cool sweat there seemed almost to glow. His eyes fell on Marguerite. Surely her rich, coffee-colored skin would melt the last moment, a cruel joke, or he would sink away as he entered her as into some bottomless abyss. This is madness, he thought to himself. I'm lost. Yet the touch of Marguerite's hand banished all such thoughts. For the 1,000th time, he mumbled to himself in Creole slang, the phrase that Barclay continually heard and puzzled over. Anything is possible. Claude Barclay questioned more and more the wisdom of keeping August Siparis in the show. Gossip spreads like water, he told Philip. One person gets an inkling that an act is a put-on, and soon a whole town knows it. It poisons the well. The crowds stay away. Barclay worked on commissions from the sideshow acts he introduced and sold, though ultimately it was Philip who hired and fired. August was no phony, said Barclay. They all knew that. But the way he behaved put a crowd off. He'd sit like a zombie, staring into space for hours. Flies crawled across his cheek, his lips, his eyelids, and he never even twitched. Streams of weird Creole bubbled out of him. His eyes lit up like matches in the dark. Deep belly laughs oozed out of him suddenly, for no reason. Some fool from the sanitarium, said Barclay. That's what the crowds will say. Rumors like that kill a whole show, not just a single act. He, Barclay, had been around long enough to know. We've tried to take him under our wing, he said. We give him the same welcome we give every newcomer. He refuses everything. All help, all friendship. There's a limit to what a person can do. Some people won't be helped. Philip listened politely, but in the end he said August would stay. Barclay knew Philip was shrewd. Evidently, by Philip's inscrutable reckoning, August had not yet crossed the invisible line, where an act becomes a hindrance rather than a draw. Walking back to his wagon, Barclay felt a rush of blood sting his cheeks. What had he accomplished by going to Philip? It was no show of loyalty. On the other hand, loyalty, no loyalty, none of that matters in the end. When my time comes, I'll be sacked too. Nothing gets remembered one way or the other. We're funny like that. We give our last penny to one of our own in trouble, but if he or she threatens the show, forget it. Maybe he was wrong about August Siparis. But what could he do for the man? Nothing seemed to help. August's cell was near Barclay's wagon. He'd taken to peeking in on August lately. Why, he couldn't say. Again, no different. August sat on his cell mat, eyes closed, mumbling to himself. Barclay turned away, a chilly feeling rising up his back. No, he was right to have gone to Philip. Something was not right with August Siparis. Likely he was a bad egg from the start, even before Pele. After all, he had killed a man. Barclay shuddered. What would August do if he knew that he, Barclay, had gone to Philip? Barclay's ears pricked up. He distinctly heard the sound of a woman's laughter coming from August's cell. Crowds are right, he thought. The man is insane. Transformation? Metamorphosis? Who can say? But for once, August Siparis awoke and did not feel tired. The scarred bags of skin below his eyes did not hang low and gritty. No sleep caked his lashes shut. His ears didn't buzz as though a fly was loose in his head. His hands were steady. His breathing was regular. Normally, he only truly felt himself, as he used to be, with Marguerite. Yet this morning, he arose easily from bed, a light springiness in his step. He was hungry for breakfast, a meal he never craved. He'd left the circus tents, and he walked the short distance to town. At a small restaurant, he bantered with the cook and actually ate eggs, potatoes, ham, bread, coffee.
The sun was just rising, and a low shroud of fog hung about the still sleeping city. Rays of sunlight pierced that vapory fluff like solid shafts, gouging great holes through cotton. A song the dock workers used to sing played in his mind. He found himself whistling. "Good morning," cried a passing voice from the fog. "Good morning yourself," he called back, unable to see a thing. August Siparis was astonished at himself. His limbs felt strong and powerful. He held himself straighter than he'd held himself in years. He noticed in the mirror that his eyes were clear and bright. What could it mean? He wondered. He roamed aimlessly for a while, taking pleasure in the air. Then he made his way back to the circus. Barclay was already at the ticket booth, making ready for the day. "Morning, Barclay," said August, as he breezed by Barclay. "Good morning, August," replied Barclay, as stunned as if a large safe had just fallen on him. August never spoke to him, unless it was to answer a question. "August?" But before Barclay could gather his wits, August entered his cell and closed the door. Could it be the same man, he wondered. He walked differently, stood differently, and he said good morning? That day, August Siparis did not dream of Marguerite. Though he sometimes closed his eyes to search for her, she did not appear. Nor did he see snakes or ants or centipedes. His closed eyes found nothing but the same dark void that other men see. A strange calm filled him. He watched the crowds come through that day, and he studied their faces. They were the young and the old, the infirm and the healthy, the curious and the sympathetic. And since he gazed intently from face to face, no one mocked him. No one cursed him or threw refuse. They all seemed genuinely sorrowful as they filed past. This must be what a corpse feels at his funeral, he thought. What was it Marguerite had said? Corpses walking the world? Perhaps he was a corpse after all. Evening came. The rush of circus goers swelled and then diminished to a trickle. Soon only the show people were left. From here and there came the sound of a roustabout securing harnesses and cables. The restless animals padded back and forth in their stalls, sensing a change coming. Everyone was ready for a move again. That was a part of the circus life that got into the blood. August Siparis walked out of his cell into the midnight air. Marguerite still had not appeared to him. Had she vanished, as he predicted? His body still felt unusually light and alert. Even in the darkness, his eyes remained keen. What's all this for? He wondered. Though it was 50 yards or more to Philip's wagon, August Siparis could tell by the shadows on the shades that Philip was entertaining again. He even knew who it was. No secrets in a circus, he thought, even from a corpse. He inhaled the night air, amazed at how fully his lungs expanded. He looked down at his hands. Though scarred, as always, they somehow felt more powerful. He imagined he could see rivulets of energy coursing beneath the skin. The hair on the back of his neck began to bristle. He realized someone was standing nearby. He spun about. It was Marguerite. Her hair was pulled elegantly atop her head in a way he'd never seen. Around her neck, the strands of golden chain glittered pale yellow in the moonlight. The smallest of them bore the tiny cross. Though his sense of smell had been destroyed by Pele, with Marguerite it came alive again. All of Martinique wafted about her. Orchids and mimosas, the salt of the sea breezes, the smells of the marketplace, of old women carrying baskets of bananas and guavas, papaya, the scent of almond and coconut pies, drifting from earthen ovens. He fancied he heard a calypso tune. The stars above them danced. Marguerite, he stammered, realizing that he was not asleep. She had come to him. Without a word, she walked to him and put her arms around his neck. The cream-colored dress she wore lent her skin a burnished hue under the moonlight, as if it too were cast in gold. "We're together, August," she whispered, "just as you wished. We're together." They stood for a long while, wrapped in each other's arms.
letting the night noises come alive around them. August saw a constellation he recognized, pointed it out to her. It was the Southern Cross. We must be south of the equator. Can't see it up north. As usual, he didn't know what city he was in. We're in Rio, she said. Her dark eyes softened, seemed to envelop him. Her hand squeezed his. There was no mistake. It couldn't be a dream. Tears welled up within him. Can such a thing be? He asked her. But she only smiled. They went to his cell. August was mad with desire, as if the times before had really only been dreams. He turned to close the cell door and stopped. Something caught his eye. His first impression was that a star had come down to rest atop one of the big tents. It was shining brightly. Then he recognized it as a spark. It began to bounce along with a will of its own, leaving a tiny trail of smoke at each stop. Soon each smoldering spot began to blaze, whipped by the light sea breezes coming in from the harbor. For a moment he stood transfixed, watching the little spark blow along. Like an imp, it jumped and cavorted. There was a queer deliberateness to it. August? Called Marguerite from within the cell. Stay inside, he cried to her. I'll be right back. And he bounded off. The energy that coursed through him all day now carried him from tent to tent. He moved like a whirlwind. He shouted warnings into each group of wagons. Fire! Fire in the tents! He helped the trainer and roustabouts get the animal cages to safety. All of his strength came back to him. He lifted heavy beams and cables, moved winches. He helped with the bucket brigade. Philip showed up. The blaze had begun to light the night sky. The stars disappeared. Smoke curled about the ground like an assassin. Tell Barclay to go for the fire department, yelled Philip, noticing that August was everywhere at once, in command. August Siparis made his way through the thick clouds that were belching smoke into the area of Barclay's wagon. Inside, August found Barclay all but unconscious from the choking fumes. He pulled him outdoors. Barclay revived, began to cough. What is it? What is it? Barclay shouted, wild-eyed when he came to. He half thought August Siparis had dragged him into his world, that Pele once again filled the air with death. Fire, Barclay! The tents are burning! Go for the fire department! Just then, both men saw a strange sight. The queer spark creature appeared and began to climb up the side of the wooden structure that housed the sideshow acts. It hobbled up the wall and sat on the roof. An instant later, a great crackling noise erupted as the dry wood burst into flame. Marguerite! Screamed August Siparis and rushed off to the cell. August! Yelled Barclay, following him. August wheeled about at the entrance to the crumbling structure. Barclay, go for the fire department! They faced each other a moment longer. Then August Siparis turned and went in. A tongue of flame spewed from the top of the building, lashing about. Goodbye, August, said Claude Barclay, and then he turned and ran toward town. Inside the cell, August saw Marguerite still lying on the straw mat. Was she dead? Asphyxiated? He drew nearer. No, she was awake, alert. She looked at him tenderly. The blaze was all around them. August, she said, come sit with me. Marguerite, he screamed, I must get you out of here. I can't lose you again. He looked about, searching for the right wall to crash through. He had his strength back. What did a few more burns matter? He must save her. He must save them both. She rose and took his hand. August, we're together. But the fire, he yelled, the fire! Huh, it's nothing, she said. And she placed his hand on the burning table. There was no pain. The flames that licked his hand felt cool, like seawater. You see? She said to him. August Siparis laughed. She hadn't come to him after all. He had gone to her.